In every age, God raises people up to speak the truth to the world in a way that is currently relevant. Though our opinions should not be held with the same esteem as the biblical canon, we still carry the hope of Christ to the world. Our society has forgotten what it means to follow Christ. The bright lights of truth seekers are barely visible in the dim twilight of a post-Judeo-Christian society. We all see the darkness coming. All we can hope is to share the light that He has entrusted to us. This is Modern Apocrypha. Hey, I'm Jared.
And I'm Greg.
And this is Modern Apocrypha. Welcome. And what we're going to talk about here is something that I actually said at one point that I don't really want to talk about, but that's okay. Well, sort of, sideways. So go ahead and tell me what, or go ahead and tell everybody what you were thinking.
Sure.
And so then we'll get into it.
It's a pop culture topic, and it's a pop culture topic, and it's about specific people, but only in the relationship of how you might look at conversion into your church from the outside. So the two people are a lady named Nala, who has a colored past and is converting, and Russell Brand, who has a colored past and is converting. And different portions of our communities are for and against each of them for different reasons. And I thought we would discuss what some of those reasons might be, what would be a reason to say that you're not yet ready, or nobody should ever say that, or, you know, that seems to be the biggest hit, nail to hit for me is can you say that someone is not accepted?
And if you don't mind, if I just lay out my thoughts on this real fast, then we can sort of go into whatever else you want to. Number one, it's nobody's bloody business. It is nobody's bloody business what they believe or what's between them and God. That is between them and God. He is their creator. He is your creator. He is my creator. And what we do is between us and God. Now, where there is room for criticism is when people take God and they carry His name on purpose in a public sphere. So, for example, whether you're looking at the Nala, and for everybody's background, this is the girl who did an interview with Michael Knowles a while back, the one with the colored hair, who's an OnlyFans girl. So,
and I'm hearing about this secondhand. I have actually never seen this person.
Okay, well, either way, then you've got Russell Brand, who I'm sure most people know who he is at some level, and I've watched some of his videos on YouTube, or Rumble rather, over the past few months. And, you know, he has some useful things to say at times, but I think where I would come down on anything is sort of twofold. Number one, if you're carrying your faith in God into a public sphere, then you are bringing yourself under a level of judgment that is higher, a level of scrutiny that is higher than if you're not carrying your faith in God into a public sphere. It's like, you know, the football player or the basketball player or the whoever who says, who points to Jesus Christ and gives Him the credit. That's great. But when you're specifically using God's name and using your connection with Him to your own gain in a social media or a media context, and you're getting attention because you convert, that's pretty dangerous for people to do that, because number one, it does bring them under greater scrutiny and they will be judged more severely because they're putting themselves kind of in the position of a teacher. And we know the Bible says that if you do that, you're going to be judged more severely. So It's a dangerous thing to do. This
was one of the things I was hearing about the complaints for Lunala, was that at her young conversion state, she's still given position to teach as a pastor in the new church.
And I haven't heard that. I had no idea that that was the case. And frankly, you know, I have no problem with people sharing testimonies, but
right, testimony is different. Though.
Okay, so then we can then we can get into the whole problem of the office of pastor being a destructive thing. You know, the whole pagan Christianity. Great book, Frank Viola. Go read it if you haven't. The office of pastor is a destructive, terrible thing that the church should never have embraced. So, you know, it's like, are we surprised that it becomes abused, you know, by anybody who's able to abuse it? No, we shouldn't be surprised. It never should have been what it is. And what do you even do with this? So it's like, do I know what their relationships with God, whether you're talking about Nala or Russell Brand, do I know what their relationship with God is? No. Do I have a place to judge that? No. Do I think that they should probably, you know, just be quiet about it and carry on with their lives, and that it would be better for them if they did? And does it make me cringe when people wind up dragging God's name through the mud because they're caught in something, or they're doing something and they're a public person and what they're doing is icky? Yeah, that bugs me. And do I find myself being above that? No, I'm sure there are plenty of things that you could rake me over the coals for too. So, you know, beyond that, I don't know that I have a lot of thoughts on the whole subject.
It's interesting. So, when you go to your local church, you attend every Sunday, you know, and you have an opinion about the way that church should change its habits in one way or another, and you had Hillary Clinton, literal Hillary Clinton, walk in the door and no change, right? You suspect she may be up to political gains. Hillary Clinton walks into your church. What do? She's saying, I'm converted. I'm, you know, one of you guys. Come vote for my husband.
What would I do if someone like that walked into my church and said,
specifically
her?
Yeah,
I would say it's wonderful that you've become a Christian. You've got these things in your life that you need to address. As my sister, if you are my sister, these are things that you seriously need to sit down and address, because these are bad things and they're going to take you in a bad direction.
Would you?
That's all you can do.
Encourage? Would you encourage and embrace her in worship while ignoring and discouraging the pandering and politicking while there? Would you chastise and wag your finger at the politicking and say, "Don't do that here"?
I would go so far as to say, you have to stop doing this here. You must stop doing this here, or you will not be accepted here. This is not acceptable behavior. It's like somebody walking into church in like a bikini or something. I'd say, no, you don't get to do that here. We dress here in a way that is respectful of other people. We act here in a way that is respectful of other people. It's so
out of the ordinary that I would stop what I was doing and walk up to them and make sure they were okay. I wouldn't even think that there would probably end up being some kind of
right. Well, and my point here is,
what's going on?
My point here, though, is that it isn't my job to approach Russell Brand and say, dude, you know, you're not showing the fruits that you ought to be showing to say what you're saying. Your version of Christianity is not really Christianity, and you're not really following Christ. What you're following is something else. That isn't my job. If God put me in his proximity and gave me an opportunity to speak to him, I would happily do that. But my understanding of what he has said, and if you look at how he professes his Christianity, to me, there's serious issues there. And if I were given the opportunity to speak to it, I would love to point him to Jesus. But I'm not, I don't have that proximity. I don't have that opportunity. And that's okay, man. I don't need to. It isn't my job. It isn't my responsibility. And he is God's work, not my work. Now, you're talking about Hillary Clinton coming into my church. That puts me in proximity to this person, and it gives me an opportunity to speak into their life. And if I have that, there are two things you have to do. Number one, it is really easy to come off as condemnatory, because when somebody is genuinely seeking God and they've still got all this junk in their life, because I know you know what I mean, it is so easy to have huge amounts of junk in your life, especially when you're first seeking God, and to be really sensitive about it. So you can't be condemnatory toward people, but by the same token, there are things where when they're doing it in your presence and it's gross and it's disrespectful to everybody around them and it's bad things, you have to say, you know, this needs to not be this way. This needs to change. If you want to be here, we want you to be here, but you can't be doing this.
Right.
And so then encouraging them to God.
And being there, but never. Right. And I think that the argument or the consideration in the two situations between Nala and Russell Brand is that with Nala, there was some question about continued negative acts while being embraced. You know, and no.
Well, and that's true of me too, though, man. I screw up all the time. And when somebody like Nala has this history, her whole life, her whole adult life, especially, of doing these things that are really bad things, just because you come to Christ doesn't mean that those old habits don't come back to visit you. It doesn't mean I can't see their heart. It doesn't mean that they're putting on an act. They may be putting on an act. I don't know. It isn't my job to decide. That's between them and God.
Well, the way that an organization on the earth would try to deal with that would be to allow them to come and offer them guidance as a student, and then not allow them and punish strictly any profiteering, any, whether it's social profiteering or financial profiteering, that happens from that interaction. You can see, theoretically, if someone is wildly profiting on it and then turning around and doing ungodly things when they're not being watched.
Well, and I get that. Yeah. And, you know, so the only people who have any responsibility to speak to that are the elders in the body that person is involved with. Okay.
Right.
So if let's say you come to my church and you're doing the same things, it isn't my job to kick you out. It is the elders in that body's job to say, you can't do this. Those are the only people who really need to be concerned with that. It's none of our damn business. It's nobody else's business.
There is sort of a global consensus body for those people that don't have a local church. I would hate to, for those poor people that listen to the Pope, but that's kind of the same concept as a top-down general concept of these things. And then as you came into parishes, you'd have bishops and people that would have a finer grained look at things. And Protestants, they more vote in the church for who their elders are.
I don't understand what you're saying here, but I would say that any kind of hierarchical approach... Hold up. Any kind of hierarchical approach to church structure is ungodly and evil.
Well, it's not about that. It's about finding an appropriate space as Christians to keep our damned mouths shut, because we're not the ones that talk about who's coming or going. We would not put that in an open space. We would talk to our elders. Right? So the appropriate space for all the Christian streamers is what? That's the thought. The appropriate position for Christian streamers is what?
Nobody gets to decide other than God. And we have to trust that God is perfectly capable of taking care of his own name. And if anyone who carries it, who calls themselves a Christian and is not, that they are his business, not our business. And that the only thing we really have responsibility for is those people who are adjacent to us, who are in our community, who are our brothers and sisters. That's what we've got responsibility for.
I know that I have a strong feeling about a much older story.
I'm sorry. Okay. Go ahead and go over it. We'll this is kind of a different topic, so we'll go into that next. You go first.
Sure, sure. My general feeling is that you cannot deny the church. You cannot deny the true Christ to anybody, no matter what. Don't put a stumbling block in front of anybody. You're going to hurt yourself in that. The story that I relay is Lady Gaga and Glenn Beck. And Lady Gaga was going through some cancer. She was in a downtime looking for, you know, maybe sympathy, but maybe true care. And in a space of true care in that moment from the, you know, the faithful world, we could have had a happy convert. You know, it's not like I haven't seen a search for stability in the woman constantly. And the complaint I had was the radio man that he was back in the day, because this was 20 years ago, but the radio man he was back in the day was he spent his entire half hour, literally, this is what happens to you when you're not godly, and ha ha ha, look what happens to you whenever, and that's like, you're missing an opportunity. You're not helping your parish. So I do agree that
it has been truly amazing to watch the change in Glenn Beck over the past 20 years. He went from somebody who was really hard to listen to because he would make fun of people and he would mock people and he was really hard-edged to somebody who I would say is closer to what I would see as an appropriate public version of a Christian than most people who claim to be Christians. And he's a Mormon, which,
right,
you know, I have my issues with what they believe that are pretty serious issues. So I just find the whole thing to be amusing. Glenn Beck has actually said stuff over the past few months that has been really encouraging to me. And I really appreciate the guy. So, but it has been really interesting to see the change in him. Now, if you don't mind, can I pull on the other thing that I was thinking to pull on? And this is actually where I would go with the whole thing. When I said at the beginning of this that it is none of our bloody business, what I was pointing to is most people, including most Christians, take opportunity to gossip and to pass judgment on other people at a level that is just sickening and awful. I will say bad things about Catholicism. I will say bad things about Mormonism. I will point to bad practices here and there, but you won't see me say bad things about people real often. I may, you know, I have lots of problems, but this is one thing that has always really bugged me, and that is that it is not our job to be judges. And when we put ourselves in that position, we damage our witness, we damage our ability to interact with other people, and we tear ourselves down. It's like that old saying, when you start throwing mud, everybody loses a lot of ground.
That's fair. Oh, I can certainly see that among some groups, they will try to lift themselves up by pushing down on everyone else. And then also you do get a cross understanding among plenty of people that seem to think that as a Christian, you are worthy of teaching, worthy of trying to help. And then they just stack the help on until you're broken. Right, and then they just don't even care to correct the people that they don't consider willing to accept it or whatnot.
Well, and to a degree, I mean, that's me to a degree. You know, I'm not going to go preach to Klaus Schwab, because until he runs into a wall and God pulls him down into the dirt, there's no chance the guy's going to repent. maybe he will someday. I hope he does. But until that day, I don't think it's worth my time to spend time yelling at him. I just point at him and say, look, it's Dr. Comic Book Evil over there is wanting to put everybody in the pods and make them eat the bugs.
I don't actually believe that. I think that he's a CIA asset, but just like Epstein. Oh,
well, I mean, so what? He's still saying what he's saying. I mean,
yeah.
Whatever sort of machinations are going on doesn't matter to me. My point is to speak to what you were just saying about calling people
and things like reaching out to calling. Right, like reaching out to certain stars, you know, that you may have had, if Rachel Maddow right now broke down crying, say, I found Christ, I've been so wrong, somebody help me, I'd go help her, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
But it would take her saying, and probably visibly seeing it in her, right, that, so... I guess I'll save this topic for after the break. So we've got something to talk about after the break on this space. Did you have anything else in this trying to get through to people that are openly talking about Christianity as Christianity becomes something more mainstream where everybody wants a piece of the pie and everybody's talking about it and offering opinions that are not grounded in anything?
Well, you know, I think maybe pointing back to what the enemy is trying to do right now isn't a bad idea. And you can see this in a lot of different areas, whether it's the Christian nationalism movement or anything else. When the enemy, and actually a great older example is the Catholic Church. When Constantine took Christianity mainstream for the very first time, it was not a good thing necessarily. It took something where people really followed Christ and it gave it public favor to a degree where it could become a cultural thing instead of a real thing. And so when you move a relationship with Christ into a cultural sphere instead of it being an individual thing, it becomes a cultural phenomenon, you wind up with lots and lots of problems every single time. And the problems are just, there's a multiplicity of them. And so what I would say is that when people act out of a real relationship with Christ, it's going to fill their whole life. It's going to affect everything they do, whether they're in politics or whether they're called to minister to people or whether they're called to make shoes or, you know, whatever, doesn't matter. A connection to Christ will change everything we do. But concurrent with that, as society changes, as more people, you know, become Christians, it opens the door for all sorts of destructive, toxic, weird ideas, changes, fake Christians, whatever, because when it becomes a positive cultural thing to be a Christian, when it's required to be accepted, then the reality of it is cheapened, and it's a lot harder to tell the difference between somebody who truly believes it and somebody who professes it because it's advantageous to profess it. And we're kind of at a weird tipping point between the two right now, where it can still be advantageous to profess it, but the majority of society doesn't necessarily anymore. And so it's moving. And because the enemy is still real and active in the world, what happens when you go from a big chunk of society actually having a relationship with Christ to a very small piece, and the enemy having overall influence over things, it gets to be really difficult to be a Christian. And it isn't culturally, socially advantageous to do it. Look at the way it is in China right now. It is not socially advantageous over there to profess to be a Christian. If a few more percentage of their population came to Christ, we would see a change in their government and a change in their culture to the point where it would then become socially acceptable and eventually socially advantageous to profess Christ. That's the way societies work. That's the history of it. And so you get this weirdness
going. That wouldn't work in a Chinese system because the idea of Christ, the truth, the light, and the way, if you're seeking actual things, dictatorships tend to kill off those people first. And so they can't survive in a dictatorship. You'd have to change the structure.
That's nonsense. Well, okay, so yes, you're right. They have to change the structure. But do you know what percentage of the Chinese population is actually Christian right now? It's a significant percentage. We're getting up closer to,
I don't know how many. I heard they had the highest rate of conversion, but the total numbers I hadn't heard.
Right. And so it's like Rome. Back when Christians were persecuted under the Roman dictatorship, Christianity grew faster percentage-wise than just about anywhere else. And it's the same thing in China right now. And so the cycle in history is when a certain percentage of the people get to a point where they are Christian, the culture and the system change to make that acceptable. And at that point, you start to get weirdness coming in because once it's culturally acceptable and advantageous to be a Christian, then you get all the people who aren't really Christians coming in and pretending or who don't have, you know, when the disadvantages of professing a commitment to Christ are at their highest, that's when you get the most light shining in that darkness. And then when it becomes culturally acceptable, instead of it being a darkness, it becomes sort of a twilight. It's like everything is kind of gray, and it's really hard to tell who is a Christian and who isn't.
It is quite interesting. I would certainly put myself in the place of stand up and count me, but don't expect me to teach somebody I don't put myself on the level of a pastor, but if you need to kill someone because they're Christian, count me. I'm not going to say I'm not. Right. So.
Right. Well, I hear you. And as for me, you know, I cannot help but testify to the truths that he has taught me. I don't seek a position of teaching, but I have to tell the truth that he has taught me. Otherwise, what use are they? It's like being given, it's like that parable of the talents where where the master gives his servants money and they either bury it in the ground or, you know, they invest it or whatever they do. And in my case, I've been given this truth. It's some of the most valuable stuff in the world is truth. And do I just bury it? Do I refuse to share it with people? No, I have to share the truth that I've been given. And so I don't want to seek out a position to teach people, but by the same token, I do have to put the truth that I know out there so people can find it.
I think that's probably a positive way to be. One of the things that Scott Adams says, the Dilbert guy, is you don't pick your career, you don't pick your job, your customers do, right? So if you've got this truth to put out there and it is widely accepted and you get to be a teacher, you didn't choose that. You just presented the truth until enough people came to you for it.
Yeah, fair enough. About time to take a break, shall we?
Indeed. See you guys in a minute.
Bright Star has been out for over a month now. I just want to say thank you to everybody who has helped to make it the success that it already is. I've got a huge, huge plans for the future. Great things going on, working on the audiobook, working on the anthology, working on book two. Everything's moving along. Just thank you, everyone. If you don't have a copy yet, you should grab one. Head over to e6universe.com. Use the promo code Israel for 10% off.
I'd like to take a moment to thank all the people enjoying Modern Apocrypha. As many of you can see, I'm an avid coffee drinker, and I've been drinking North Arrow Coffee for a couple of pounds now. You can find North Arrow Coffee at northarrowcoffee.co, all one word, where they list coffee of the month and how green coffee is handled. I've been enjoying some of the number 4 Honduras and some of the number 10 Peru, available at northarrow.co. If you'd like to help support us even more, you can use discount code E6 for 10% off your coffee order today. Thank you.
And we're back.
Welcome back, everybody. We took a little bit longer break than normal there. We've been chit-chatting, catching up. I was curious on the state of the dialectic. You know, where do you feel the push-pull is at the moment? I'm a little concerned. Anytime anything becomes mainstream, I watched this just recently with the MGTOW space going from a close-knit group to a mainstream. Everybody says they are. And then you've got some people saying they're not that, and they are this, or they're right. And then you get striations, and it's no longer MGTOW. It's five different groups that are a black pill, a blue pill, a purple pill, whatever, jiggity-jag they call it, right? So they're no longer concerted men's rights group anymore. They're completely worthless. They're broken up into things that are even contradictory. So yeah, what is the
True too.
It is. So what's your take on the dialectic at the moment as we're going more mainstream?
Well, and specifically, I mean, you know, the dialectic's in a lot of different places, and just to re-hit what that is for people. We use that as shorthand for the enemy is creating two sides that oppose each other for people to jump on those bandwagons to pull them off track from where they ought to be. And it happens in any number of ways in any number of places. That's the way Greg and I tend to talk about it. So to me, it looks like what's going on is we've got this sort of, I think that the enemy is trying to pull Christians out of position. Here's what I mean by that. Over the past few episodes, we've talked about things that are going on, like this evolution thing, where the enemy is using these old tired talking points that are basically dead and trying to bring new life to arguments that are basically defunct. And the reason I think the enemy is doing it is to try to create a false front, a false flag, a false side that is Christianity to oppose this mainstream thing that isn't real Christianity. And I think the reason for that is we're moving into a time that is sort of, call it the end of the age, where we're getting there, I think. And that one of the we even see it in the book of Revelation, one of the symptoms of that, one of the events there, is the scarlet woman is destroyed by the beast in Revelation. And what that sort of symbolizes, I think, is this, what would you call it? I don't know whether it's a massive world religion that consists of all sorts of brands of things, whether it's Muslim and Catholic and whatever. You know, it's obvious that the Pope is trying to make nice with Muslims. That's been going on. It looks like there's a convergence of world religions that's sort of happening of the religious structures. And whether it's supposed to be a Christendom 2.0 as part of that vanguard or not, I don't know exactly. It's hard for me to see the clear shape of things. But I get the idea that the enemy is trying to create a side that is Christianity, that isn't really people following Christ. It's people trying to create a kingdom in this age that is following Christian principles and using a lot of people who really do have a heart for God to do that. And in the purpose of this being to try to create something to destroy, to try to discredit Christianity sort of once and for all in order for the beast system to come in. That's what it looks to me like is going on. And so when we see things like Russell Brand becoming a Christian, we see Nala becoming a Christian, we see all these sorts of people moving into a Christian sphere, it's sort of preparing the groundwork for a new movement that is a, quote, Christian movement that is actually not really a Christian movement. It's an attempt to discredit Christianity by means of the enemy. And one sort of example of this that I'm seeing on Twitter right now is that a lot of the TradCon, you know, traditional conservative Christian cultural influencers are becoming very similar to Muslim in the way they express Christianity. So, for example, a great picture of this is how they say you ought to treat women. We're seeing a huge movement on the, quote, Christian side of things to treat women as inferiors, as sort of servants, as and this is a reaction to, obviously, to the feminist culture, which has swung so far in the other direction that it has just, you know, absolutely ground men into the dirt. That's where MGTOW came from, right? And there's valid reason for that, because it's a really bad thing, no question.
But well, and I'll stick up for the facts here. Sticking up for facts here, MGTOW is a family court reaction, not a feminist reaction. Family court reaction.
Okay, well, but the family court thing came out of the feminist movement. The point is that this whole feminist thing has created these destructive cultural forces that have brought all kinds of ruin and damage, whether it's to the family, whether it's this abortion crap, whether it's, you know, any number of things across society that have happened because of feminism. There are reactions coming against those. And one of the pendulum swings that we see is this traditional conservative Christian sort of block that is now turning into a functionally Muslim culture in a lot of ways. I saw somebody on Twitter just the other day talking about how he no longer allows his wife to speak to him. She has to write on a whiteboard instead. It's a power trip. It's a disgusting, gross, unchristian thing. Yeah, dude, but it's happening. Okay, we see this. We see the counter swing of the pendulum coming back. And this is why when you and I've had this conversation about MGTOW and about the red pill crowd and about all of that, my take on it has been so different from yours. It's because I see this counter swing coming back and I'm like, none of this is good. This is all bad. It's all anti-Christian. It's just what they're reacting to is a valid thing, right? Because the whole feminist movement has come close to destroying society. No kidding. But that doesn't mean that the counter swing of the pendulum is going to be any good. It just means that we see a counter swing of the pendulum coming back to destroy things in a different way. And so what I'm seeing is this gathering of energy into a religious pseudo-Christian movement that is looking to create a Christendom 2.0, or looking to make nice with the Muslims if you're Catholic, or looking to, all of these things are going on at the same time, and which direction each one is heading is a little different. But it all looks to me like it's pointing toward this convergence of world religions into a system that the enemy can then defeat. And that's a 2,000-year move. You know, it has been since, well, it's not really quite 2,000. It's closer to like 1,500. But the point is, since the time of Constantine, when Christianity went mainstream, this has sort of been the ultimate plan, is to, over and over again, we see pictures of it. It happened around the year 1000 when Catholicism was started to show cracks. And then we had the Protestant Reformation in the early teens, whatever. And then it has over and over again been a case of the enemy trying to create a false Christian front that he can then use to damage people and possibly knock down. And that's what I see sort of going on with this whole Christian influencer sort of thing that we see coming up. That's sort of the direction I see things going, and it's gross.
Yeah, and I do think that in that overall explanation of world events, that there are some confusions in there that are just the word that's attached to it. The trad wife thing, or the trad girlfriend, nothing about religion in that statement. So a lot of those people could be Muslims saying that, and that's ascribed to Christians. It could be complete atheists. They still ascribe it to Christians, right? Everything's just like the way that they seem to act like everything's blamed on the Jews. This is one of those where it's all blamed on the Christians when it may not be a Christian person saying it from that group.
Right. Well, so, and even if it is, you know, in history, we have seen over and over again, the enemy sets up these people who may originally have been Christians and incentive traps them into doing things that are not Christian things, whether it's the televangelists who sort of got put up on a pedestal. And when a Christian gets put up on a pedestal, what's going to happen to him is pretty inevitable. A fall comes after that, because we're not meant to be put up on pedestals. We're meant to be brothers. And so, you know, God forbid that I ever get put up on a pedestal. I don't want that. I want to create good fiction Christian content for people, and I want to talk about true things, you know, whether it's on Modern Apocrypha or any other podcast or any other circumstance. I want to do those things. But if I start to get put up on a pedestal, you know what my reaction is going to be? It's going to be to draw the people who I trust now in closer to be my brothers and sisters, and to shut out the people who would put me up on a pedestal. Because that's the only way to stay healthy as a human being and as a Christian. Do not get put up on a pedestal. Don't do it. Don't put other people up on a pedestal. If you do that, you will create a situation where they can't help but fall down. And that's sort of what we've been seeing with Daily Wire lately in a lot of ways, is they got put up on a pedestal by a lot of the conservative movement. And because of that, they're having these problems. They're not huge problems at the moment, but they're, you know, meaningful problems. And I get the idea that this is God sort of checking them. It sort of keeping them from getting to a place where their fall could be too far, where guys like Steven Crowder has fallen. Like, if you look at what has gone on in his personal life lately, it's really sad. And that dude needs prayer, man. He's, the way he treated his former wife, and the way
how did he treat his former wife? I don't think that there's anything true in there.
Oh, you should hear some of the recordings that were taken of him and of what he said to her. It was pretty gross, dude.
I I've listened. He had an argument that was recorded.
You've listened.
People have arguments with their wives. The quote unquote
abuse
charge.
Sure, but okay, so they've got one car. He's denying her the use of. They've got one car. She's pregnant. He's denying her the use of the vehicle. He's controlling her life in ways that are pretty gross and weird. And he's cheating on her. Dude, no. He got put up on a pedestal too much. He got put into a public sphere too much and got knocked down. That is the pattern. Even guys like Ravi Zacharias, who was, man, if there is such a thing as great Christian men, Ravi Zacharias was a great Christian man of our age. And if you look at what happened toward the end of his life, at what he was accused of, and I don't know whether it's true or not, most people seem to think it's true. Even the organization that he once headed had an investigation, and they said it was true. But when you look at the investigation that they headed, it was done by somebody who was not very long before that an atheist. So I have questions. I have way too many questions. But the point is still, he got put up on a huge pedestal and wound up being sort of knocked down. And it doesn't matter. Everybody has had it happen. Everybody has these issues when they go into a public sphere. That's just humanity, man. We're all human. God help me if I ever get put in that position.
Yeah, I think my ideal position would be the position of an angel. I get to help people and no one ever gets to see my face. That would be my perfect spot. I know it's not exactly a realistic expectation, but that's what I would hope for.
I hear you, and I can't help but think that will take you interesting places, because we tend to get put in the positions that make us the most uncomfortable. And that would be so
I can't imagine
the most uncomfortable. Well,
I can't imagine going star crazy. I wouldn't care if there was the Monkees or the Beatles or Elvis and there were 1,000 women screaming at me. It would not do anything for me. It wouldn't matter. I'm very odd in that way.
Well, and for me it could matter, but in order to not have those things take you down, you have to intentionally deal with them. And so what I'm saying is, this is advice for Christian influencers in general, is don't let yourself get put up on a pedestal. Don't let yourself be more than a brother. Find those people who have been your brothers for a long time, who are worth being brothers with, and don't ever let them see you differently than that. Because if they ever do, that puts you in a dangerous position. They are there to keep you grounded, to keep you sane, because we all need to be sane. And you can't divorce one part of yourself from another part. You can't be one person in public and another in private. Instead, you have to project the private part of yourself out into the public. And if you're doing more than that, then you're putting yourself in a position to fall down. It's like me. I'm happy to talk about my failings, man. I'm happy to talk about the problems that I have, and people see it. And that's partly why they don't like that public face that I put on, because it's not a public face. I don't look pretty. I'm just me.
Right. We are just standard American dudes in the Midwest. I suppose I would look at it just as one last touch up. I agree with the thought. In practice, the ways that we see that we fail at that is whenever we rely on something other than our loved ones and the living word of Christ. If you say, I bowed this many times on the pedestal, on the beam, I stood up and bowed and stood up and bowed, I did this many rosaries, I washed this many feet, I sang the praises of the Lord this many times, right? You might think, I've done the check marks, I've done enough to not get a big head, while getting a big head about having done those things. So the living word of Christ is not something that you can well, it's not an across the board thing, but it's impressively important to get the fellowship constantly to help you guide yourself along those paths, because they are blinding paths. They're misty paths. They're hallucinogenic paths. They're very much set up with every single trap that Satan could possibly have imagined thus far for you to fall into.
And he's pretty good at using all of the things that knock us down anywhere he can to trip us up. And that's not just Satan. That's any of the enemy. That's from him to the smallest minion. They're pretty good at using those manipulations on us. So, no, you're right. And that's the human condition in a lot of ways, right? It's like Jordan Peterson, you know, he says, you get yourself together, you put your life together, you get your room cleaned and put your house in order, and then maybe you have something to say to the world out there. But the more that you come into the public eye, the more likely you are to find places to fall down. It's like Jordan Peterson himself has been having issues lately, where he had the thing where he went away because he got the SSRIs and he got, you know, he had this blind spot when it comes to the medical system, and it pulled him into serious trouble for a couple.
He had an additional blind spot with the overspeaking past his expertise, right? So he has a particular niche, yes, because of his expertise, and he overspoke past his expertise and got himself in a lot of trouble. You know, I think he was speaking about
even with me, you know, there was that
in the moment, but still.
Well, and even with me, you know, where he started talking about anonymous Twitter trolls and how we shouldn't have anonymity online. And I'm like, no, dude, you're like, no, shut up. And it's because he doesn't understand. So you're right. Speaking past his expertise. And you know, there are people who say that he got MK Ultra'd when he was gone that long. And I don't know. I have no idea. But I tell you what.
What does that mean? I understand MKUltra is the CIA program of super soldiers, but...
Not super soldiers, it's mind control.
Oh.
Brainwashing and mind control.
I remember there was an old movie where the guy kept on buying copies of The Catcher in the Rye. Mel Gibson kept buying copies of Catcher in the Rye. And it was so that they could give him a trigger word. And he was like a Manchurian candidate. And he would go do the assigned task without even knowing he was doing it if they gave him the right combination of words. Is that the same project?
Yeah.
Mental programming?
Now, exactly how it works is, yeah, that's right. And exactly how it works is something we don't exactly know. You know, most of us at least haven't even really come into contact with it. A lot of people think it's total fiction, but I've heard and seen enough to know that there's more to it than that. How exactly it works, I don't know, but I do know that there is something there that goes on. And I will say this, actually, this leads me to something else that I've been wanting to say for some time, and that is that when you get too far down a conspiracy rabbit hole, people say that everybody whose name you know is a plant. Everybody is controlled. If you know their name, they're controlled. If you know their name, they're... And I would say that that's nonsense. Now, there are a lot of people who are owned to some degree or other by some group or other. And when you look at places like Hollywood, it becomes obvious that the culture there is designed to put people into an incentive trap. Same with politics, same with a lot of things. But then there are guys like Jordan Peterson or Glenn Beck as an example, or whoever, who have managed to, or like Rush Limbaugh. Anybody who says Rush Limbaugh was controlled, I mean, that just isn't credible to me. Jordan Peterson, he was not controlled. Now, he may be under the influence of certain lobbying groups. I don't know, but, you know, I can't... What he became known for, when you spend any amount of time watching the guy, you know, it's impossible to think that he's disingenuous, because... It's just not the case. And the same was true of Rush Limbaugh. He believed what he believed. Same is true of Glenn Beck. He believes what he believes, and a lot of what he says is really not, does not fit any particular agenda. So there are people who aren't controlled. That doesn't mean they're right. That doesn't mean what they say is true. But you cannot, and this is to my listeners, do not let yourself be pulled into a place of believing that everybody is a plant and everybody is controlled, because it's not a way to live, man. Instead, base what you do, base your life around Jesus Christ, around your personal relationship with the Lord, and then don't put anybody on a pedestal, and it won't matter if they're controlled, because you'll be able to test the spirits with everybody, just like Paul told us to. And it doesn't matter if they're controlled if you're doing that, because God will give you the answers you need.
Indeed.
I don't know.
I'm thinking
about what would you like to add here before we call it?
Well, I would say that it's not solely among those that profess Christ that you'll find this. Christ works through the criminal and the CD network just as well. And in that, I don't trust 85% of what he says, but Joe Rogan speaks from a place that he doesn't know. We're going to find out together. Maybe we're all getting lied to, but him personally, he's just, a sports guy. He's the dumb jock. He's not trying to be the smartest guy in the room. He's just saying, you know, if you're going to make a bunch of noise, I'm going to be the bouncer, and we're going to talk about fun stuff, right? And just keep talking and keep talking. Nobody's going to shut me down for anything. Anybody I want to talk to, I'm going to talk to. So it's not even a Christian space per se, but it is an honesty space. You're not trying to get somewhere. You're not trying to push me towards a topic or towards an end. You're saying, here's a fact I found, or I'm curious about this topic, or, right, as opposed to, you should think this.
You know, what's really curious is how, it's really curious how guys like that wind up getting the spotlight eventually, because they want to be honest, because they want to talk about the things that matter, and people sense that at some level and want to listen.
Well, and even just showing up and, hey guys, I'm having a bad day, and I got XYZ happen in my life, blah blah blah, but we're here to get it done and we're gonna continue on. Those sort of things, you know, I'm a little slower today, or sniffle sniffle, I've got a cough, I'm a real human being and I'm not faking, right? There's so much faking, but finding the true people that are at least willing to listen. I think if you personally, individually, spent 2 hours stuck on the side of the road with Joe Rogan, he'd say he's a Christian from then on. It just takes, and he's not that he doesn't know, it's just that he hasn't got the information, right? I don't feel like he's like headbutting against the idea.
When I listened to his conversation with Stephen Meyer, the opposite of that seemed to come out to me. He is anti-Christian at a pretty base level that is hard to express in words, which is what you'd expect of somebody who's under the enemy's influence, man. And well, that's nothing against Joe Rogan. I agree with you that, his space tends to be honest.
Yeah. Is he against the Christianity and the spirit of Christianity, or is he against the system like Catholicism? Is he against the killings?
No, he's against Christ.
He's against faith. That seems unusual.
No, he's against Christ.
Interesting. I will have to. Stephen Meyer.
That's what I took out of it.
He did. Interesting. Interesting. I have not got that impression from
him. I had to shut it off. It made me so mad that I had to shut it off.
Yeah, I get that quite a bit. And that's also something I think if you're out there and you're trying to be on X all the time, and you're trying to post and you're trying to build yourself, but also be a good representative for your faith, man, take 10 seconds and, you know, make sure that you are saying what you want to say. Because, yeah, what is that saying that sometimes people see Christ through you, right? They find it, their image of the church is you. So give them a good image.
Oh, that's a scary thought.
It is what it is.
You know, we're getting close to time to call it here. Any final words?
Oh, I think I'm pretty good on this.
All right. Thanks for being here, everybody. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks, guys.